Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to ATI Financial Radio, a plain English, no-nonsense approach to personal finance. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2015, and today's show is Common Investor Mistakes, Failing to Know the Basics. I am Dina Isola. I'm here with Tony Isola, and we are very glad to be here. It's been a while. We had to take a little bit of a hiatus. Today we are kicking off Common Investor Mistakes. It's a topic that we're going to cover over the next few weeks. Today's show will start at the very beginning with the basics that elude many investors. Make sure you have these concepts down before you pass go. Investing and gardening have a lot in common. Tony's going to discuss his latest blog and what he has learned over the last few years as he's perfected his approach to both gardening and investing. Will your emergency fund be enough to see you through a tough time? 60% of Americans do not have enough to cover an unexpected $500 car repair. We're going to provide you some helpful resources and guidelines to strengthen your emergency fund. And with summer fast approaching, what advice will you give your children about their employment earnings? Learn how you can help them make the most of their summer wages. So, Tony, you've been busy. You put a blog together. It actually got picked up by NerdWallet. And it's something that you've been always very good at. You've been good at growing money, and you've been good at growing in the garden, and strangely, it correlates.
Yeah, well, I think you have to look at it as those two fields. You have to actually do it. You can't just read about it in a book. And the only way you learn is by making mistakes, and then hopefully you won't make the same mistakes over and over in both fields. And I just wrote about how in gardening, it takes time to really grow things properly and let gardens develop, and it could take many years. And most people don't have the patience, and it's just like money. People will try to grow their money quickly, and that leads to big mistakes. And same thing with gardening, buying very big established plants or big trees and putting them in the garden and filling up all the space, and then you don't account for the fact that they'll continue to grow, and next thing you know, everything could be overcrowded and unhealthy. So it's the same thing with investing. If you try to get rich quick, it usually ends very badly.
Well, and the other thing with gardening, too, is like investing, usually when people are starting out, they have to start small. They don't have a lot to maybe bring in all the big trees, and they have to start from seeds and start slowly, and that patience, that's where the patience comes in with their money.
Yeah, and you have to have the proper time horizon, and most people, you need a time horizon in the decades for investing to really work. It's magic, and in gardening, it's similar. If you plant a tree, it could be 20 or 30 years before it truly grows to its full capacity, and it's like stocks pay out dividends, and dividends tend to be half the overall returns of the market. And you kind of just collect them. And the same thing with certain plants. They'll drop seeds. And next thing you know, you could start with one plant, and now you have 10 plants. And then those plants will drop more seeds. And, you acquire a huge wealth of plants, just like you'd acquire a huge wealth in your portfolio if you take your dividends that keep increasing each year and use them to buy more stock with that pay you more dividends.
You talk about cost efficiency, which I know for a fact from our garden that was huge, that a lot of what you did, you bought things off season, you bought things when people weren't buying them, you did a lot from seeds, and you significantly reduced the cost of what you spent out there. So spending a lot in investing isn't necessarily helpful.
No, in many things, people think that the more you spend, the more you'll get. And it might be true for certain fields, but in investing especially, it is completely false. And in gardening, you have a big trade-off. Yeah, you'll get an immediate result, but it'll cost you a lot of money, but it might not be there for the long term. It's like, you could spend a lot of money buying annual plants every year and keep having to replace them, and that costs could add up, or 1 year maybe spend a little more and buy perennial plants, which will come back each and every year, so you don't have to make that huge purchase.
And drop more seeds.
Exactly. you could also divide the plants, dig them up and divide them, and it actually helps the plants, and you could take one plant, and now you have three.
Now, you talk about diversification. Obviously, it's pretty boring if you have a garden that has, you know, one flower. And when you plant, I know you plant things that are going to benefit other things. For example, you may plant things that repel insects off of other plants, and you kind of have it working together. And a good portfolio is like that as well.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And it's actually, you know, let's say you don't have a diversified garden. What you do is you have all these plants that will bloom at the same time in the spring. Now, for the remaining three quarters of the season, there's no flowers in your garden. And that's obviously not a good thing. And it's the same thing with your portfolio. You don't want investments that move together, all go up or all go down at the same time. So, like in your garden, you'll plant some flowers, and some will bloom in the spring, some will bloom in the summer, some will bloom in the fall. And as the others die back, the other varieties will bloom. So it's the same thing with your portfolio. If the economy is good, your stocks will do well. If the economy is bad, your bonds will do well. So there's a lot of similarities.
And some things partner well together.
Exactly. Like combinations, you know, certain colors don't go well, just like certain investments don't go well. You know, having all high-risk investments is not going to work, you know, for the most part. And having all, you know, plants that maybe require, you know, lots and lots of care will probably not work either, because you'll probably just end up getting tired of dealing with it. So, yeah, there's a lot of similarities. And I think people who have the temperament to grow things probably have the temperament to invest, because it requires, you know, a lot of patience, and there's a lot of things you can't control too. So you just deal with it, and you have to change when those things happen. You have to, you know, you can't control if it doesn't rain. You can't control if the sun doesn't come out, and you can't control if, you know, certain kind of bugs appear out of nowhere sometimes. So and diseases. So you try to take precautions. You plan for the worst. You buy plants that might be resistant to diseases, just like you'll have bonds in your portfolio that are resistant to recessions. So everything, you know, kind of flows together if you understand the process.
So to read more about that blog, you can log into maliceforall.com, or you could find the article on NerdWallet as well.
Mm-hmm.
You came across a very alarming statistic.
Oh, yeah. Very alarming.
It's sad to me to think that 60% of Americans, if they were faced with a $500 car repair bill, wouldn't have the money. And the significance of that is your emergency fund is the first line of defense between going into debt, credit card debt, and whatnot. And it can easily spiral out of control. You know, a car repair is one thing, but now car repair and maybe you've been laid off could really,
right,
you know, just put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah. And if you have, you know, that's just $500. That's most. So what that statistic is saying is most Americans don't even have a partial emergency fund. Never mind emergency fund. Obviously, $500 is not enough for an emergency fund. But most Americans don't even have that. So, you know, sometimes I sit here and I think, you know, well, we talk about stocks and bonds and, you know, portfolios and IRAs and all these things. The average American is nowhere near even at a level of starting those accounts, because you cannot start retirement and investment accounts if you don't have an emergency account to cover your immediate needs. So, you know, if reforms were made in this country and, you know, people were forced to learn about money and finances, the first thing would be to talk to them about having money for emergencies, because if you don't have money for emergencies, you have no business investing money, because you don't have money to invest.
Right. And we get asked this all the time, too. How much should I have for an emergency fund. And it really does depend upon your individual situation. You know, obviously, if you're self-employed, you may not have the risk of being fired, but you may run the risk of a slow season or your business falling on hard times. You know, if you have a secure job, say you have a tenured position, you know, maybe the emergency fund needn't be as beefed up because you do have this certainty of employment. So it really does depend.
Yeah. I mean, most people say, you know, have at least 3 to 6 months, but I would think it's better, you know, to have a year because you want to factor in everything, even though the probability is low. Like they said, the statistic is there's, you know, a 10% chance of losing your job, and a normal job, not, you know, I'm not talking about jobs that are union protected and things like that. But so I think you should count on, say, all right, I lost my job, an unexpected medical bill comes, and a car repair needs to be done, and something's wrong in the house. So if you total all those things up, you're probably looking at, you know, having a year of emergency fund to be safe, which means a year of salary put away. And that's certainly...
After tax or before tax?
Well, after, you know, what you
spendable.
Can spend. Spendable. But, and you could also factor in what you get as unemployment. So maybe that would cover, you know, 20% of it or something like that, you know, depending on how much you make. So maybe you'd need 80% of the after tax. But whatever, I think it would be a good policy. It couldn't hurt you to have 1 year of, you know, after tax money put away that you would make in your salary. So if your salary is like $60,000 and you'd bring home $45,000, you should have $45,000 in an emergency fund. Or at least that should be your goal. Maybe you're not going to have that overnight, but you can certainly, you know, build it up over 5 years or so and put a certain amount away, and you'd be surprised that, you know, things could start to, you know, accumulate. You could simply take your, you know, if you get a tax refund and use it to fund part of an emergency fund. If you get a raise, you could start putting that money away. And then when that's done, then you could really start on your investing. That's the order of how it works. Because if you don't do that, if you put money in investment accounts and you need them now for an emergency, what's going to happen is you're going to need to use those investment accounts for your emergency and pay taxes and penalties to take that money out. So it kind of defeats the whole purpose.
You know, we hear this a lot, people, you know, ending up tapping their 401k.
Right.
For example, right. Obviously if you have a taxable account, we're not, you know, you're not faced with that same issue. But if you're going into your IRA, you're making a distribution before you're supposed to, before age 59 and a half, or you're tapping a 401k or a 403b, you're taking a loan, it's just a really, really bad idea.
Right.
The penalties make it prohibitive.
Right. If you're desperate.
If you're desperate, like you're going
to
die if you don't get the surgery and there's no other way.
But, you know, these are not, to take money out of there, not only are you're foregoing the tax-deferred earnings over many years, and you're getting a small portion of the money when you figure it out, because the government will tax it and there'll be at least a 10% penalty on it. So, you know, it's usually like...
I'm going to restart a recording on another recording because, unfortunately, it looks like it's taking us 15 minutes. We're going to keep going. I think it'll keep recording, so just bear with us.
Okay,
so you had some sites that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I mean, there's a site. It's called HelloWallet.com. And on the site, there's actually a emergency fund calculator. So if you went on to Hello Wallet and typed in the search for emergency fund calculator, you can go on there and, you know, put in some information about your life and your expenses and salary, and it could basically tell you, you know, a good estimate of what would be a proper amount that you should have put away. Because like we said, everybody's different. But if you wanted a general rule, I think a year of salary after tax money would be a safe bet for most people, and certainly wouldn't hurt you in any way.
Great. Okay, on to Kids Corner. It's the time of year when maybe your children are finally starting to get some employment, doing a summer job. What advice can you give those children so that they make the most of their summer earnings. For starters, just encourage the employment in the first place, no matter what their age is, whether it's, you know, they're 13 and they want to be a mother's helper or go mow lawns. I think the best thing you can do for your children to help them appreciate money is to help encourage them to work, for starters, and then give them a little freedom with that money. And it also builds confidence. So that would be my first bit of advice. Okay, secondly, you know, if they're getting close to, say, college age, you may be wanting to encourage them to save for college expenses, such as their books or their spending money, and give them kind of an opportunity to start managing their own money. And this would be a really good time to test run it, especially if they're not yet going to college, if they're maybe a year away. This would be a really good test run.
Yeah, I think that, you know, work is a very good thing for any kid, because not only does it teaches them some valuable lessons, it also exposes them to different people that they probably would never meet if they weren't working. And that's a very valuable skill, to, you know, learning how to deal with people from all kinds of different backgrounds. And, you know, and if you're working in a store or working, you know, outside in some manual labor job or things like that, you're probably going to come into contact with people that you would never meet in your life. But in the end, it'll help you, because you'll just learn. The world's a big place and there's all kinds of people in it, and you have to know how to deal with them.
Goal setting should definitely be something that you sit down with them, look at whether they have some short-term goals, such as maybe purchasing a car, or longer-term goals, such as maybe, you know, financing graduate school in the future, or possibly buying a home. So for their short-term goals, you're basically going to be looking at bank accounts. And given that the rates are so low at the bank, basically what you need to do is try and find banks that are convenient to them so that they're not getting hit with ATM charges because they need to use banks elsewhere. Also, maybe if they have a debit card, that they're maybe being given cash back when they use the debit card, and certainly a bank that has a strong online presence so that it makes them, you know, easier, especially for this generation, to do their banking online or be alerted when their balance is getting low if they're, you know, paying bills out of it. So those are just a couple tips. Did you have anything to add?
And again, teaching them to take part of their salary and put it away in the bank, you know, and that's just a very good habit to form. And taking, you know, 15% of whatever they make and putting it away could be turned into a lifelong habit, which will have tremendous results down the road. So it's almost like a training program for life. So it could be a very, very valuable experience.
Okay. So our weekly topic, common investor mistakes. We really felt strongly about this because we see a lot of adults that really don't know the basics, that are successful in their own right, but certain things kind of elude them, and they're important things. And if we could help clear these things up, investors will be in a more strong position to be proactive about their own personal finance. Obviously, I think we covered get an emergency fund in place. So that would be number one before we even get into these investment things.
Right. I mean, that's the foundation. You cannot invest money unless you have money for your immediate needs. So that needs to be very clear.
So another thing that we see often is failing to plan or starting late. If you don't make your investments a priority, if you don't make your goals, if you don't clarify your goals and really have an idea of what you want out of life and where you want to go, it's just not going to happen. Money's no different. So getting started early is probably the best thing you can do.
Yeah, and you know, that means, you know, when you get hired, you know, talking to the people at the Human Resources Department and getting information about the 401k plans available, and, you know, understanding some of the options, and understanding that it's the most valuable thing you could do is starting early and having all those extra years. So just getting in that habit of saving and understanding that this is important is priceless, because there are many people, you know, in their 50s and 60s who still don't understand the value. And down the road, obviously, they might not be worried about their money now, but when they're older, that's probably all they're going to think about is their money, because they're probably not going to have any. So, you know, the first step would be, as soon as you get hired and you're eligible, is to find out about what type of offerings your employer offers you to save for your retirement. And even though it's hard to think like that, you know, you won't, it's really thinking about financing your freedom. So that's a better way to look at it for kids, because kids don't want to think, oh, I'm going to retire. No, it's like, if you do this, you'll be free sooner. Think of it like that. Because in a way, when you're working for somebody else, it's not slavery, because obviously you're being paid, but a lot of your life is being controlled by someone else. So if you do the right things with your finances, it will buy your freedom from other people. And that's very important, I think, to most people, and would get them more motivated to do this research.
And we've said this many times, but by not investing in yourself, by not paying yourself first, you're actually making all these other trivial things more important than your future. So your cell phone bill or your cable TV, mm-hmm. things that in the scheme of things, really, you know, you should at least be contributing what those bills are to yourself every month. If you don't value yourself as much as your, you know, your cable TV or your phone bill, there's a problem, because you aren't going to get anywhere putting money into things that are very short term, you know, an immediate need that dissipates. So,
yeah.
And when you're young, the other thing to really understand, and if more young people understood this, I think they'd be phenomenal savers, is not understanding compound interest and time. Because when you're young, you don't have to put away a lot. You just have to put it away consistently, because time is going to grow those assets stronger than anything else.
Right, and it's compound interest is just earning interest on your interest, and then interest on that interest, and interest on that interest, and interest on that interest, and it's amazing the effects over 30 years. It's just basic math. And then once you get to a certain critical mass and you start doubling your money every 7 to 10 years, you would be very surprised what people can accumulate by the time they are 55 or 60 years old. But the only way that works is starting early, in your 20s. It doesn't work if you start in your 50s or 40s. You do not have enough time.
And your school-aged kids with summer jobs, it's not too early for them either. If you get them into the habit of
right.
doing this, the results can really be dramatic. On ATIinvestment.com, I have a piece there called Math All Kids Will Love, and it shows how a small amount of money can grow into a very large amount of money, and then if you start late, how you can't catch up to what that one other investor did because they put in early just for a few years.
Right. The richest man in the world can't buy time. That's it. That's the most valuable, precious resource in the whole world is time. So if you waste it when you're young by not putting the money away, you can never get that back, ever. So that's how you kind of have to look at it. And you could also be foregoing huge, huge opportunities, because many companies will match your contribution. So, you know, maybe you have to put in 5% and then they'll match, you know, 5% of your salary. Next thing you know, if the market does nothing, you've made 100% on whatever you put in, right? If you put in 200 and they put in 200, you made 100%. It's really hard for you not to accumulate money if someone's matching your contribution. So not only do many people not contribute to their 401k, which they sacrifice all of that time that they can never get back, but there's the added benefit of just not taking advantage of a match by the company that might be offered. And again, the compound interest with a company match is an unbelievable way to build wealth.
The other good thing about participating in these plans is it eliminates the pay yourself first issue, because it gets taken directly out of your paycheck. It, you know, it's usually not missed because it gets taken right off the top, and it's lowering your income taxes because those contributions are made before tax.
Right. I mean, think about it. If you're taxed at maybe you taxed at, say, 25%, the money that you're putting in, you wouldn't get the full amount. If you're putting $200 in and you're taxed at 25%, you'd only be getting $150 anyway. So basically, whatever your tax rate is, that's what you're ahead of the game on. So even if the market has a 0% return, if your money that you put in would have been taxed at 25%, you just made 25% on your money because you did not have to pay the government. So it's really difficult not to accumulate money if you get into that habit of not, you know, paying all of those taxes up front and having somebody match your contributions. And, you know, another big thing that people do is they'll have their job and maybe they start saving at a young age, but now they get a new job and they take the money out. They don't roll it over into the new plan or into an IRA or some other tax deferred, you know, vehicle, and they cash it out and they pay taxes on it and get half the money, and they also give up all those years that they just did. So that's a really, really, really dumb thing to do.
Another added benefit of participating in these plans is that the investments grow tax-deferred, and there's a lot of confusion on that with people. We'll get asked, we were just asked recently, you know, what's the difference between an IRA and a mutual fund, or what's the difference between my 401k and a regular account? Well, the 401k, the 403b, the IRAs, those investments are going to grow without taxes being taken out while the investment is compounding. Taxable account is an account where taxes will be in effect. You'll pay taxes on the dividends. You'll be paying taxes on the capital gains. A mutual fund is simply an investment that goes into one of these types of accounts.
Right.
So it could be in a taxable account, or it could be in an IRA account. So not understanding that difference can cause problems as well, because certain investments, for example, that kick out high dividends or high gains would not be better served being in a taxable account because they have high tax implications. They'd be better in your 401k, your 403b, your IRA, Roth IRA, because of the tax implications. And a lot of people don't realize that. And so even though the investment may do well, at the end of the day, they're not clearing much because a lot goes off to taxes.
Yeah, and again, not only do they not know that, they confuse, well, you know, I'll just put my money in my IRA and I don't have to do my 401k. Well, first of all, there's huge differences. In your 401k, you can contribute a lot more. You'll definitely get a tax break on it. Well, if you just put your money in a regular IRA, the contribution level is much lower, and you may or may not get a tax benefit as far as a write-off for the amount that you put in. In both cases, the money will grow tax-deferred, but in the 401k, it doesn't matter how much you make. That money, whatever you put in, is immediately deducted off your income, which gives you a lower income tax rate.
Right.
Whereas you might put money in an IRA account, and depending on what you make, you'll get the money will grow, whatever you put in there, tax-deferred, but you might not get that deducted from your income that you report to the government. So not all of these, you know, part of it's a problem because there are many different, you know, there's IRAs, there's 401Ks, there's 403Bs, there's Roth IRAs, there's Roth 401Ks, Roth 403Bs, there's so many different accounts. But you do have to be aware of what they are because they're not all the same and they have different implications.
And oftentimes you can do both.
Yes.
Do you have anything else to add?
Well, I just think, you know, this is a start. And you know, just being aware. And if you don't know, as long as you know that it's important for you to save money for your retirement in your 401k plan and IRAs, then you're ahead of the game. Because if you don't know it yourself, you could either research or find someone that does to help you. But the worst way to go about life is just to ignore it and say, well, I'm not going to retire for many years and I could be dead by then. You know, that's not a good plan. Planning to die young is really not good. So you have to plan to live a really long time. And if you live a really long time, you need lots of money. That's just life.
As always, we welcome any questions that you may have. Like I said, we're going to be keeping up with this common investor mistake theme over the next couple of weeks. Send us your questions. Send us your issues, and we'll be happy to address them on upcoming shows. You could email us at Dina, D-I-N-A, at ATIinvestment.com. That's all we have for you this week. Have a wonderful rest of the week and great weekend. Thanks for joining us.